Okay, it's recording. So we are back. It always takes me way too long to process the files. I wind up, but it takes a long time. I do everything manually, and it's just there's always something that goes wrong, and then I have
And then you gotta
to
go
like
back and you gotta get it right.
troubleshoot like what's wrong with my blog post make file and what's wrong with this, what's wrong, why isn't this working? So, but so it's like half an afternoon at least to, so
Bah
it
humbug.
shouldn't be that fast. But if I did it, if I'm in a like
That fast or that slow?
what?
It shouldn't be that fast,
It
should it?
shouldn't be that slow. If I'm doing it routinely, like when I was doing it much more frequently, I have the routine kind of down in muscle memory, and then I just sort of
Boom,
replicate
boom,
it.
boom. Right.
Yeah. But anyway, I had some miscellaneous things to talk about, and then I
Yay.
want to talk about your trip and your talk.
Oh, right on.
So, miscellaneous things. I wanted to follow up because we talked about the trials and tribulations of attempting to get some basic health care in the year of our Lord 2025. With honest, both of us have an established patient relationship with a doctor. But everything is so hard and they're so uncooperative.
And like not like combative non-cooperative, just like confused by any attempt to avoid
Disease, like
disease.
avoid disease. Why would
Like
you want to do that? Now,
okay, I guess.
we talked about how long this was all taking, and it's still like it took weeks and weeks after that discussion before I actually got my first
Blood draw.
blood draw, and then before I got my first prescription, I ordered my meds. Well, the doctor ordered, like, placed the order, but I paid for the meds from the Mark Cuban Cost Plus Pharmacy Company.
Yeah, supposed to be cheap and delivered.
Well, it went missing. My package went missing.
Just gone.
Like the priority mail tracking just showed it like stuck, in transit to next facility or something. And after it was stuck for 10 days, I'm like, hey, this is stuck. I've seen this before. This is lost. It's not coming back. I n need my meds. I haven't been able to take potassium for 2 weeks now. So they did. They responded with one customer service email, and then I replied back and said, it's still gone, like, please replace this. And they did, but they never told me that they did. So, like, they never responded.
It just showed up one
It
day.
just showed up, like, the second shipment, which
Yay.
they sent by FedEx this time.
Good on them, I guess.
So I did eventually get my meds, but then it was just a few days away from refilling my prescription. So.
Like what?
But it was so late, like, because they counted the like time as if I had had it as soon as they shipped it, and I didn't. So now I've got an excessive amount of potassium. And like,
Yay.
anyway, so it's but it's you know
It really is.
it's okay. I'm taking my meds, but now I'm trying to arrange to get another
The blood
blood draw
draw
because
to see
I
how the
told
meds are
them that I
working.
would follow up in a month. Well, it's been over
Two
2 months.
months. And here we are.
And so I'm trying to arrange a get labs visit again.
But now they claim that you just give them the doctor's contact information and they get the.
Yeah, they keep canceling the appointment because
They don't have an order.
they don't have a lab order.
And I'm like, well, maybe you should contact the doctor you asked me to tell you about to get the lab order.
So,
Under the thing where you
yeah.
say, no, I don't have a lab order, call my doctor.
Once
But,
again, Grace has been like leaning on people, like she's doing the heavy lifting on the phone,
and I,
And but it's still
it's ridiculous, is what it is.
it's
Well, and this
ridiculous.
is sort of another expression of how the insurance industry makes everything a mess. Because their whole frame is that the doc, you know, if I'm going to do this,
yeah,
the insurance company is the mediator about how everything happens.
Yeah.
And facilitates all these connections. And without an insurance company to do that,
right,
they're just like kind of floating in space.
Helpless, yeah.
And can't figure out how to connect any dots.
Right.
I mean, they could.
They're just, it's not, their workflow is not set up to deal with, to be intermediary with these other
vendors. No, not at all. Because there's actually three vendors, and they're relying on a fourth one to connect all the dots between
them. Right. Yeah, there's no one else going to organize this, going to manage this.
So, yay.
So.
I hate it here.
Did you want to talk about your dental stuff going on, or?
Oh, my whole situation?
Well, talk about the parts that you're comfortable talking about. I thought you might...
There's nothing I'm embarrassed about, I'm sorry.
But you might mention the trying to, like, get meds, right?
Oh,
emergency
right.
meds and what that means and might mean and all that.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe whatever part you want to share.
So, I had an epic visit to the dentist on Thursday. First of all...
epic?
No, it was amazing. Absolutely amazing. I didn't get any work done, ultimately, even after it's an hour and a half, 2 hour visit, no work got done.
Yeah.
So I'm going in the morning, I arrive there, and I'm right on time, which is unusual for me. Not that unusual, but, you know, not 5 minutes late. And I get in there, the hygienist takes my blood pressure, and it's elevated.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, wow, maybe we should wait a few minutes and let your pressures come down. So they do. It's actually higher.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, this is really high. We should call your doctor and see if it's safe for you to have care and see if it's even safe for you if you need to go to an urgent care or something. And I said, okay, fine, no worries. So we do this whole rigmarole. We talk to the doctor. I take my I skipped my morning meds to get there on time.
Mm.
So I took my morning meds.
But it's not, the thing is, you're regular medication is not a super high dose, and it's not instant.
It's not instant.
Right.
And it acts over the course of the day.
So it's...
So I take the dose.
It's not clear why it was so high, exactly.
It's still unclear why it was so high.
Yeah.
But we take the dose, and then we wait 30 minutes, and we take it again, and it's sky high, the highest I've ever had it recorded. And it, like, what's happening, none of us know.
Yeah.
We go back and forth, and basically the hygienist was like, I'm not sure you should drive. I don't want you to have a stroke while you're driving or something. But on the other end of this equation, I was having zero symptoms.
Right.
It wasn't like I got up and went and was feeling like terrible and woozy and et cetera and went to the dentist anyway. I felt like I always feel every day.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel like compromised about driving or whatnot. But it turns into this whole debacle. And it was like the first or second day of a period for after many months.
Hang on just a second.
Sure.
Okay, I'm sorry. We had a kid who I thought was unsupervised getting into the bathroom. I was like panicking.
Yeah, it can be a real mess.
Because they'll just trash the counter and run water and soap everywhere.
The flood potential we've had. Yeah, we still have PTSD from that.
Yeah, right.
That kid is 14 years old now, but still. We wake in horror if we hear bathroom water running.
Right. Well, when it sounds like a little kid's in there unsupervised.
Right. So, anyhow.
Sorry.
Like, first, second day of a period, because this is perimenopause, you know, you will have periods intermittently for sometimes years. And,
there's a long gap in between.
In between periods.
How long?
Sometimes.
Several months.
Several months.
Yeah.
And, like, the one or two I'd had over the course of like 6 or 8 months, had been really light.
Mm-hmm.
This came in like, I don't even know.
Came in like a lion.
Came in like a lion. And so, in the midst of everything else, I'm like flooding that dental chair like a crime scene. And
Bleeding heavily.
And it was a trip, the whole thing. Never got my teeth cleaned, because I was supposed to do this like deep cleaning. Like
this was not a regular, this was a periodontist.
This was a periodontist.
You had been referred to this periodontist.
Right, for like this deep clean where they kind of go down under your gum line and scale and get,
yeah,
and really clean it out. And
cleaning out your gum pockets.
And they were going to do do like in halves.
Yeah.
Because it's such an intense cleaning. They do like an hour one day and another hour another day. Anyway, none of that gets done. The way we leave is I'm supposed to get an emergency blood pressure script.
Right.
And I'm supposed to go to an urgent care or something to like see if they can bring my pressures down right away.
Right.
But I never hear back from my doctor. I talk to the nurse.
Right.
Never hear back from the doctor. I'm not just going to pull up to some random urgent care.
No. Well, we don't have insurance, and that makes everything incredibly awkward.
Well,
in addition to the COVID safety.
In addition to COVID safety. And also just like the way...
The way they dismiss people.
But also just how I really could sit in an urgent care all afternoon and not get any treatment.
Right. And when you do see someone, they'll say, well, you're fat. You should lose some weight. That'll be
$75,000. Right. Have a great day. And there was like no way I was going to go to an urgent care.
Or they'll just send you, tell you to go to the ER.
Tell me to go to the ER and wait for 24 hours for them to tell me I'm fat and I should go home.
Right.
So I came home and I had some BP meds that I know to be extremely effective.
Your older medication.
My older medication. Yeah. It's extremely effective. The side effects are terrible. So I took some, had the terrible side effects, and my pressures came down.
Yes.
But still, didn't hear from the doctor until after business hours. And he did not want to write me the emergency prescription so I could get dental care done.
Right.
Because that was the dentist. It's just the dentist's concern was, actually, this is not... he was hoping that he could get my doctor on the phone and have him just write me a script so I could move forward that day or the very next morning.
Right, so that they didn't lose... Well, you had two back-to-back appointments.
We didn't want to lose all of them.
Yeah.
He couldn't refill them. And I actually need the work done.
Right, you need the work done, and he doesn't want to just have two abruptly canceled appointments and probably didn't feel like he could really charge you, you know, cancellation fees for having a minor medical emergency.
Like, that's not, that's not something I did.
Right.
Something that happened to me. And so, there's my older medication, but there is a medication that brings it down. I think they use it in the hospital for emergency hypertensive crisis, just to get you back into line before they try to figure out everything else. So, and he said, you know, you could have one or two of those pills for dental care. So if you get here and that happens, you can bring your pressures down in about half an hour. My doctor wouldn't write the script. I had to cancel all the appointments. I'm supposed to come in and see my doctor at, God save me, 7 a.m. Next Tuesday.
We're trying to get an urgent appointment to see your doctor. But again, this is a doctor that will not take precautions.
Will not take precautions and acts an ass about it. And actually, you know what? I don't want to be unfair to them in this way. If I'm wearing a mask, they will wear one.
Yeah.
But they don't take precautions in the office.
With any of the other patients all day.
With any of the patients all day.
And they're
not doing anything to manage the air.
They're not managing the air quality.
Quality or anything. They're not taking any precautions at all. So I'm basically walking into a public place full of sick people.
Right.
The public place that sick people go to.
They still don't have air cleaners or,
Nothing. And HEPA my only protection
or...
is my N95 mask. Mind you, I've fit tested, it's well fitted, etc. But they're very cavalier.
Yes.
And the last time I was there, I got very sick with something.
Right.
And they would not follow up.
Right.
To figure out what was wrong.
They refused to investigate. Or, you know, that's when you had this inconclusive COVID test. And you wanted them to order another test and they wouldn't.
They refused to.
And, yes.
It was just this weeks long.
They're afraid of the fucking liability, which they should be.
They should be.
Right.
But
not just because of us. I mean, we can't afford lawyers, you know. But in general.
Right. The liability of taking any responsibility for this. And so, and also, there were several medical events in that follow-up where I was concerned that I was having a cardiac episode and needed some cardiac care. And they were really sloppy. I had to basically lead them by the nose to provide me the most basic care and
standard
treatment.
Standard of care.
To make sure and rule out that I didn't need a heart surgery of some kind. I need to have a stand or something placed.
Right.
It was a really, and this was in 2023, I think. So almost 2 years ago.
But it was harrowing. And.
But it was a harrowing month-long thing. And then, weeks of this back and forth, and no one will answer my calls or give me any kind of rational response.
Yeah, and then aren't they also trying to get you to take off your mask to take your temperature, even though they have temperature sensors right next to the
table, the shelf next to them, right?
That where they can measure it in your ear or on your forehead
or something else.
And then also the running joke about here you're fat, did you know you're fat? You know, that's not a joke. I'm not joking.
No,
because that's what they do every time. They're every time. Well, lose weight. Like, I'm here because I gained so much weight very rapidly without changing my diet or lifestyle whatsoever.
That means
like
something's
wrong. Like a disturbing amount of weight. And, and you know, I want help with that. Like, well, just move more and eat less. Like
every time.
And like, how you can't eat less than fasting.
No.
Right?
I'm supposed to like stop eating altogether? Like, what do you mean? Because that's where I'm at this point. Like, I should just stop eating altogether.
Right.
And yes, I should be clear. I've always, before intermittent fasting was a thing, that was my preferred pattern of eating.
You don't eat breakfast early, at least not till later in the day.
For decades.
Yeah.
And not even as like a diet culture thing. That was what felt right. That was my intuitive eating.
For some reason, I always wind up fasting almost completely on Sundays. And it never was a conscious choice.
Conscious decision.
Right. And then I was doing deliberate intermittent fasting. And going off the carbs definitely helps, like staying off the carbs, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have learned that as far as my long COVID symptoms, I need to eat extra protein to feel good, and
so
fasting quite a bit, and I feel better with a lot of extra protein. And doing the fasting, even the intermittent fasting with long COVID, makes me feel worse. You know, and it did not do this to me before
5 years
long
ago.
COVID. Yeah. I did not. I used to feel pretty good. You know, I would do the bulletproof coffee in the morning and no solid food till late afternoon or something, and you know, and feel pretty good all day.
So just to be clear, this was never any kind of like weird, I don't know what. This was me eating when I felt hungry.
Right.
Until I felt full, and then not eating again until I felt hungry.
So you're tracking your BP now. You're trying to figure out if you need to keep taking your old
legacy medication.
Med, which makes you basically pass out all afternoon. And, you know,
oh, yeah. No, it's really debilitating.
It's terrible.
Like, I can't safely drive on that medication.
Right.
My friend here. That's an ant, right?
That's an ant.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah, we've reached the point in the year where the ants are marching. They're coming in.
One by one. Hurrah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's... So that long-term thing with the doctor... With me coming to the doctor and saying, hey, I've got a problem here. I'm getting all this weight and I don't know why. And them telling me to eat less and move more for years.
Right.
And I feel like I'm probably have some kind of metabolic problem that...
Right.
Maybe it's diabetes, maybe it's this, maybe it's any number of metabolic syndromes.
Yeah.
Maybe it's my thyroid. Maybe it's actually moved into a verifiable.
They don't know.
I don't know. We don't know.
Your tests don't show, your symptoms don't match diabetes, and your tests don't show problems with your blood sugar. Right.
So.
But we don't know what caused this abrupt, like, high
abrupt and dramatic
blood
waking.
Pressure crisis.
Oh, and this blood pressure crisis in this moment.
But it is, there is a thing where perimenopause can make all kinds of things go wonky.
All kinds of weird.
Yeah.
And get out of control in a way that you don't expect or aren't anticipating.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just to kind of draw the through line, this past experience where they're just do-nothing guys, like, oh, well, all your tests are normal. I don't think there's anything for us to do.
Doing exactly enough to not successfully
get sued.
Right. You know?
Just enough to not get, like, and never providing any kind of care. And even now, I need dental care. I'd like to be assured of managing my blood pressure for dental care.
Right.
They're like, again, do nothings. They need to see me in person before they can do anything. They need, you know, they've got tests. They need to, all kinds of things they have to do, but won't actually provide any care. It's a longstanding problem. Yes, I'm looking for a new doctor.
So, yeah, we are looking. We have been.
Yeah, I've been.
Well, we broke down and you did schedule an appointment, and I'm going to take you on Tuesday morning because I finally have a valid driver's license again, although it's a temporary, like it's the.
Until you get the one in the mail, right?
Yeah, which should have been here by now.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Well, right.
That's weird.
But I finally went into a. Yeah, I guess I didn't tell that story, but you did take me to get my license renewed, and mm-hmm. it was only a matter of I have to go in and get a new photo in person and take the eye test in person, and that's about it. But I didn't want to go into the office because they take no precautions, and whatsoever. They need you to unmask for the photo. So mm-hmm. I actually practiced masking and unmasking for the photo,
mm-hmm.
and I. But when they actually took it, I took the mask off and held my breath, and then I took the mask down, like around my neck, to, mm-hmm. so my whole face was visible, including my beard and my chin. You know, mm-hmm. and she said, "No, you have to take the mask off completely. The mask can't be anywhere in the picture." I'm like, "Why? You just made that up."
Like, what yeah, the that, hell? Doesn't, that doesn't make sense.
And so okay. I'm like panicking because I'm trying to do this quickly and hold my breath and then be able to get the mask back on and sealed properly before I, you know,
et cetera.
Run out of breath.
Mm-hmm.
And I did like nervously gulp some air while I'm, because I have to take it off over my hair and it was all tied up with my, like around my ponytail.
Yeah.
So
we think you made it through that. Okay.
I did get it off, but I'm like, oh God, I inhaled a little bit. And the picture is the least flattering picture that's ever been taken of me for a driver's license, because I was actually angry. yeah, so I just looked dead-eyed and...
like, get your shot and let's get this over with.
Yeah.
She's reasonably polite, though, if I recall.
She was fine, but yeah,
But I did feel like she made that up on the spot. It's
yeah,
weird.
And also I didn't realize, because as soon as I walked in, everyone was grilling me whether I have all my documents. And I'm like, you told me over
the
phone that I didn't need all my documents
to
renew.
You need your old license and some money.
Right, so I did not dig out my birth certificate and whatnot. I was like, well, it won't be a real ID, and this is how I learned about the real ID requirement that was about to go into effect.
To fly on planes or go into federal offices, yes.
Yeah, well,
yay.
I don't want to fly on planes, but it's, I guess, good to know that now I can't.
So.
Or I guess they are still allowing you to...
to use a current passport.
To get to do some extra, they like do some... No, even if you don't have a passport... I'm reading that they will put you in a slower line and do some extra grilling
screening
and whatnot and let you fly at least for a while. They'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have a current passport either. And so
there's
anyway,
that.
So, okay. So I'm, when I say no, I'm not flying out to interview for a job. I mean it.
I'm not flying out to interview for a job. Thanks.
But it also means that like, if my dad dies, I can't fly up to the funeral, you know, currently. So,
right.
So I'm going to try to get my passport up to date, and then I won't need to worry about my driver's license for a while. I can use a passport if I need to fly.
Yeah. It's been so. You're gonna drive me. I'm gonna go to this appointment, and we'll see. We'll see what magical things happen at this in-person appointment.
It's going to be
stupid.
Stupid. I just accept.
I should say ridiculous. It's going to be ridiculous.
If you kill them all, like I will defend you.
Thank you. Like, it's going to be a ridiculous experience. I don't know what is going to come of this.
No,
but maybe I'll get my scripts back online the way they need to be.
Yeah. Because the other thing we keep telling them is we don't have any fucking money, right?
Right.
We don't have health insurance, right?
We don't have money. We can't.
Yeah, and I need dental care too. I don't have any complaints though. I have one small complaint, which is tartar building up behind the lower front teeth, which happens because that's where like the saliva pools while you sleep or whatnot, you know.
Yeah.
So, and like I've managed to clean some off myself.
Maybe you need the periodontist. I don't know.
With a,
you could have another exciting appointment too.
We have some little dental tools, but I really needed cleaning. It's probably been 7 or 8 years.
It's been a while, because we really liked our Saginaw dentist.
And yes.
we did not jump in to find a new dentist when we moved here.
And then once COVID happened, I didn't want to go see a dentist at all. But you have. I'd probably like to see your regular dentist who takes a lot of precautions with the air cleaning and whatnot. And so, but again, it's all everything we have to pay for out of pocket. So I'm like, we have higher priorities. Your health is to me a higher priority than me, like potentially losing a tooth or something.
Which I don't think you're even at risk of.
I have no. Like I say, no...
no dental complaints.
Complaints. They're just yellow and crusty.
And, you know, I don't think you have any general complaints to see the doctor about. You have complaints about things that he doesn't believe exist. So...
That's the thing. I mean, how do I talk to him about COVID toes in 2025 when he's like, I still have COVID toes. I still have tinnitus. I still have dizziness. I have POTS. I have, you know, all these
concerns.
Fatigue. I have, you know, like this brain fog and whatnot.
Right.
Thing I'm dealing with now is I'm trying to finish this online math class that's been a year in the running.
Mm-hmm.
It's Foundations 2, and it's the equivalent of several upper level high school math classes, including like half of AP Calculus. You know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's taking me forever, and I can't. In the last few weeks, I've been, like, worse. Everything's been worse. So, like, I go to do my math assignment, and I understand it, but I'm getting, between my vision and my concentration,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting problem wrong after problem wrong for dumb reasons.
Right.
Like, I picked the wrong one out of the multiple choice, even though I wrote it down correctly, because I couldn't read it easily.
Right.
And then, you know, I, like, blow up the text and all this. But then it's, like, after like, I get three wrong in this exercise, it kicks me out and said, your exercise has been halted due to poor performance. So, I mean, it doesn't flunk. It's not graded. It will, if I keep going, it will give me this exercise again in a week or two.
Right.
But I have a quiz assigned now that I need to take, and I know if I take the quiz, I'm probably going to fail it. By the way, a failing grade is like below 80%.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So I'll probably fail it, and then when you fail a quiz, it reassigns it and makes you take all these reviews. And I'm like, okay, I'm at 92% of the course completion.
You're so close. So close.
Then I'm like, is my brain, which is going to give out first, the course or my brain? Right.
Or my eyes.
Or my eyes. So
all of the above. So yeah, the complaints you might see a doctor about, our doctor is not in a position to provide treatment.
Right.
And also, the way that I had to spell out providing cardiac care.
It's really unnerving.
It's unnerving, and I wonder if he himself isn't struggling with some issues.
I believe that he probably is. Now, the person I'm dealing with now I shouldn't give away too much information, but a nurse practitioner rather mm-hmm. than the doctor.
Right.
But yeah, I don't blame them for saying, you know, there's only so much we can do in a televisit, right?
I think that's very true.
Yeah.
I don't think that's actually a false statement.
No.
But if my concern is maintaining my medication.
Right.
That appears to have been working until now.
Right. Right.
Has appeared to be working. I don't know that you need more than a televisit to continue medication.
Right.
I don't see a good case for that.
And they, if they don't believe in long COVID, they're not going to believe that COVID might be a root cause of the vascular damage that is maybe elevating your blood pressure.
Right. They don't.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know what we can do to work together effectively, other than keep me on medication, so I don't have. Some kind of cardiac event,
right.
And do that long enough for me to find someone that will provide care.
Yeah, which is what we have to do.
Right. So it's
someone should be managing your perimenopause symptoms as well.
I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Just trying to figure out what's going on.
Except
at least rule out potential problems.
Arms. Yeah. Oh, we have a visitor.
Maybe no.
We have
no.
A visitor.
Hang on. Okay, our little daughter actually will go get a butter knife.
and open any door she wants.
And break into my bedroom.
Your locked room.
Why?
Now she's
sitting outside the door growling at us.
Growling. And she can cuss us out. She's being very polite tonight. Just straight up cusses us out.
Right. Sometimes I can't believe that after 25 years we're still dealing with kids dumping food everywhere and making messes and, you know, drawing on the walls and all. It's been so long and I'm so tired of it.
It's been a long time. It has. So we're in this conundrum where I just don't want to be out in the cold as far as getting prescription meds.
Right.
While I try to find and interview doctors.
Right.
Which is the long, absurd, tedious process to begin with. Yeah.
Her siblings are trying to distract her and get her involved in something.
Okay. In some game that's not Raid Dead Room.
Yeah.
These providers really want you in the office, and it's a strange insistence on their part. I know it's a legal liability. They want to be able to say in the record they are not legally liable for anything that happens to me because they are prescribing medications for a patient that they've actually seen in the last 18 months, 2 years, or whatever it is.
We still consider the country to be in a state of emergency.
I know the state of emergency has passed, but
the official state of emergency has passed, but the actual state of health emergency.
It's still quite an emergency.
I was just thinking today that the whole situation. So we have, just to say, we have guests today. They're playing, a bunch of other kids are joining us. Their parents are here.
Oh, yeah.
The kids are all playing outside with our kids. They're having a good time. But it is true that our kids are growing up in an environment that was similar to, like, the polio lockdowns.
Yes.
Right, during that period. The difference being that during that period, it was widely understood that this was to keep everyone safe and not due to mental illness. Right.
Right.
That, like, it wasn't just due to, everyone didn't just have anxiety. Right.
No.
There was a genuine risk.
And they were taking...
Mitigating that risk. And every community saw and knew about people that had gotten very badly injured or killed by polio, some of whom were still, like, lingering.
Our oldest child's math tutor, his spouse was a polio victim who used a wheelchair.
For the
rest of her life.
Yeah.
That's in the last 30 years.
Right.
Right. That this was actually still part of our lives.
No, there are a lot of people still who are survivors of polio.
Right. So we understand it just to be still in a state of emergency because society-wide mitigations to manage COVID have not taken place. But even the health organizations who bungled this have not declared COVID to be endemic, but still consider it to be a ongoing pandemic.
Yes.
Both the World Health Organization and the CDC understand us to be in a pandemic still.
But meanwhile, as far as all the official engines of the various bureaucracies and organizations that are run by political appointees, it's now a cacistocracy?
Cacistocracy, yes.
Where literally the worst people are being put in charge.
Yeah.
So we have like Vinay Prasad being put in charge of like HSH or some shit. We have RFK making just these batshit statements. We have just these awful people. Jay Bhattacharya is in charge of some shit. I don't want to get into all about that.
Into a rant.
But I do want to talk about one more thing before we go into your trip and all that, which is...
Oh, right, sure.
I talked last time about how I was reading this series called Lockwood & Co.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, and I finished all five books.
And enjoyed them, as I understand.
Now, I mean, it's not such a huge achievement. They are relatively short books for like young adult readers, you know. But for me, it was an achievement because I haven't been able to read that much since, you know, the last few years, over the last few years. And I did enjoy them a lot. I thought that the story arc played out very well, and it finished, right? Which
Okay,
is
which
like,
is
so it's not like an endless soap opera
right.
where,
That's the highest priority for me in any kind of book, is
yeah.
that it's there's an arc that runs to completion.
Yeah. I'm not going to talk all about it here, but there is a lot to talk about in these books about their politics, about the sociology, about the characters, the way they develop, how are portrayed, because they're young people, right? Like what this implies about young our time and their imaginary time, you know? And there's also a TV show, which means there's a Netflix show that ran only for one
One
season,
season.
but in my view, it was a very good adaptation, and I have nothing but praise for the young actors and actresses who worked in it, and most especially though the art design, the set design, the
Oh, right.
locations, the basically the design, the props, all that. It was just amazingly true, accurate, and true to the books,
Nice.
so, with a lot of interesting choices made in who they got to portray different characters. And why, and like the politics of that casting
Those
kind
choice,
of thing.
those choices.
And I would love, love, love to talk endlessly about that with someone. I
Probably
can't
me.
get any of the. I bought this series because Veronica heard about the show.
I wanted to try it.
And so I got all the books, too. She hasn't read any of them and seems.
Or watch the show.
She hasn't finished the show or read
Read
the
the books.
books. I'm like, okay,
All right,
well,
that's
I
fair.
enjoyed it, but I like, come on, watch the show and
Come
read
on,
the books,
look.
and then we can
Then we can get into it.
we can do a podcast. We can talk about
It'd be so
Lockwood and
great.
Company. Anyway, but I just want to mark the milestone that I finished a whole series, true, a short children's series, but or young adult series, but a series nevertheless. And I enjoyed these books, although there are politics, there are issues, there's to
Well, there's
discuss,
always politics, you know.
right? So
Everything's
it's
politics, honestly.
I can't recommend it unequivocally, but any of it, but I did find it very, very entertaining, the
Nice.
whole thing. And the writing quality is much better than I expected, and a lot of this build up in each volume and whatnot, and the reveals that happen is very, very cleverly done. There's also, I talked last time a little bit about Sheridan Le Fanu as one of the earliest writers, well, Victorian era writers of ghost stories and weird fiction. And I got a couple paperback anthologies of, what did I call him? Sheridan Le Fanu. Le Fanu. I'm reading a book called Green Tea and Other Weird Tales, Oxford World's Classics edition. It's a paperback from Libris. I'm not impressed with the book itself because it's on really flimsy newsprint paper, and it looks like the print quality is not great. It looks like a scan, you know, like a print on demand, like facsimile rather than properly printed. But I read the first story, and I love his writing style. It's beautiful. Very long sentences, very long flowing sentences, not at all what people are used to reading today. A lot of vocabulary, a lot of old vocabulary. I love that kind of thing. Being an English major, a lot of people would be
I do
very
it.
turned off by it. But
But you're having a good time.
when a sentence goes on for a third of a page, you know,
Like me,
with
right?
multiple parenthetical phrases, semicolons.
You always get confused when Jameson does that.
Like, well,
like it's annoying. It's annoying in that context for you.
I don't consider her to be the stylist that. I mean, she's not bad, but the stylist that some of these great old writers are. But anyway,
they drag on a sentence. Yeah.
It becomes a very complex thought.
I mean, to be clear, I'm not a fan in either setting.
Yeah, right, yeah.
It doesn't do anything for me. I'm just kind of like, okay, wait a minute. But I'm not pulling out and doing a sentence diagram.
No, well, you don't really need to do that. But what helps is often to read the sentence out loud and realize the way it flows
as spoken language.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, and I can usually parse it that way. But it's always, I just always find it annoying.
Yeah, well.
In both places.
It's an acquired taste, but indeed. Having had to read many books, of many old books for my college major way back, I fell right back into that.
Right. Like, so you came by the taste, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So let's talk about your trip. And then when you have talked about your trip, I'm going to ask you to read the talk you presented.
Oh, right on. And yeah, I think it was at the tail end. You could actually, it can be part of the, maybe I'm not thinking this through, but it can be part of the podcast, but then you could also maybe
I could break it off into a separate episode. Easily.
So there's a group I've interacted with many times over the years. Called Revolution of Tenderness in Steubenville, Ohio. And they're working on nurturing and fostering and rebuilding that community, which has frankly seen better times. And there was a university there, a large conservative Catholic university.
What was their industry?
Steel.
It was a steel town.
It was a steel town.
Yeah.
Right on the Ohio River. Gorgeous.
Absolutely exquisite. Do you want to talk about the literal experience of driving there along these?
Oh, I'm getting there.
Yeah,
I'm getting there. So I've worked with them since before the pandemic on various community organizing, strategic planning type things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was invited this year to come to their annual event called the Festival of Friendship, and it's an arts and community event. They talk about community organizing. They have booths where local artists come and sell their wares, bakers, there's always kids stuff they do, like a little children's carnival with a bounce house and face painting and like that. And they have panel discussions and poetry readings, etc. It's a two-day event, day and a half. And so I was invited this year to be their keynote speaker, and they agreed to take several precautions and mitigations me to be there, so I went.
That was cool.
And to be clear, they were taking the precautions for me. This was not their original plan.
Well, I mean, they wind up being for everyone, but it's nice that you convinced them to.
Yes. I mean, yes, obviously it benefit. And I said rather explicitly, I don't want to participate in an event that gets people sick.
That gets anyone sick.
It gets anyone sick. Yeah. I'm not coming. I'm not asking you to do this just for me. Because it's great. I can actually manage not getting sick all by myself.
Right, right.
But I don't want to participate in something that gets other people ill.
It's so hard, especially, this is why I don't go to concerts, live shows anymore.
And
because most, very few exceptions, most artists have given up trying.
Given up. It's not happening. Which is weird, because that's their own, it harms them.
Right. But it is harming them.
It is harming them. Yeah. But really, as a matter of solidarity.
Yeah.
And a matter of, I'm sorry, just really basic ethics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to knowingly...
Human decency.
I'm not going to knowingly cause harm to other people by transmitting disease.
Right.
So that was my line. They agreed to it.
Tell it to our doctor.
Exactly. Yeah. First, do no harm. What? Back up. Explain that again. And they were fine with it, so we went forward. So I came out. They got me an Airbnb. I stayed for the weekend, and it was fun. It was good to be out. You know, it was nice. which is the thing I keep coming back to, is if we took precautions, there's a lot of things I wouldn't do.
A lot more. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Within reason, I mean, you're somewhat, your health limits you a little bit in some ways. But.
Yeah. So, yeah. And actually, it was really quite accessible for me. Took my walker everywhere I had to go.
Yeah.
It was good. It was good. One thing that bothered me was that there were dogs. A lot of dogs were there. And that's like that's a thing that's separate from the pandemic that's kind of like blowing my mind about the world now. And I'm...
white folks sure love their dogs.
Love their dogs, man. Love their dogs. And so, yeah, there was this thing where I was really irritated because one of the dogs took my pizza. And like, what am I going to say? What am I going to say?
You're going to yell at the dog?
I'm going to yell at the dog.
Give that back.
Yeah, you know, like,
I want to press charges.
Kind of an asshole is going to complain about this, right?
Yell at the dog for...
But like, you know, I was going to eat that.
Right.
Right? So anyway.
Sorry.
That was actually the worst part of my
experience, honestly. I didn't hear about this.
Yeah, no, I didn't even bring it up. But no, it was honestly probably the worst thing that happened. Yeah. It was a good overall experience. Lots of talk. The Strong Towns was represented there.
Our friend Chuck Marone.
Yep, for Chuck Marone.
Friend of the show, I guess.
Friend of the show, yep. They have Chuck was not there. He doesn't even know. But yeah. But no, he was not there. Their local chapter leader was there. It was on a panel. He introduced me. It was a good visit. What else? Oh, so more about Steubenville. This, like any other manufacturing belt city, like Saginaw, like Pontiac, Michigan, like Flint, like Cleveland, like Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh's had a renaissance. Chicago's had a renaissance.
Yeah.
There are many larger cities have enjoyed a renaissance of some kind.
Yeah.
But most of these cities...
It may, in some cases, because they've managed to get military-industrial complex manufacturing going.
Mostly.
Yeah, right.
Honestly.
Yeah.
But there are hundreds of these manufacturing belt cities that they've never come back.
Right.
And Steubenville is one of those. They do have...
They don't even have prisons going.
Prisons going for them. Some of them have prisons, like in the UP. There are towns that survive because of the prison.
Right.
That's the reason the town functions. And it's the worst situation.
Yeah.
Where the townspeople are deeply invested in incarcerating people.
Right.
Like their
that's their only livelihood.
Like their literal their ability to eat and remain housed.
That has been for some time.
Is and directly related to whether or not we incarcerate people.
And so they don't... Yeah, they want to see more immigrants detained by ICE.
Actually, that's really valuable to them.
Yes.
As a
no, it's an awful bind.
Awful bind.
Economic
and
bind.
It's what's that thing? You know, it's a man won't see something that his paycheck depends on not seeing.
Yeah.
I'm quoting that incorrectly totally.
That's okay.
But what Steubenville does have is this large, it's not that large, but a widely influential college. So they have all kinds of town and gown problems where the college has interests about how the town should be developed.
Mm-hmm.
And the town does not share those same interests. It's a bit of a bind. Some of the most exquisite landscape that I've ever experienced. I'm embarrassed to say that this was the first time that I've really seen the Ohio River Valley. I have seen the Ohio River many times.
Right.
I have never actually seen the Ohio River Valley. Utterly breathtaking.
You showed me, we were looking at a map, and you showed me Steubenville, and I had not realized how close this was to Pittsburgh.
Oh, it's like 30 minutes outside of Pittsburgh.
It's very confusing. And also, we were looking at the geography of this slice of
West Virginia.
West Virginia.
Because to get to Pittsburgh, you have to drive through West Virginia.
Right. It's quite strange. I've taken that approach to Pittsburgh for sure.
Right.
And I've gone through this Appalachian roads where there's a lot of elevation. You know, it's a little frightening, honestly.
It's honestly, yes. The drive was actually frightening. It's true.
Yeah.
Actually frightening for multiple reasons. The elevation is one thing, which I tend to not
care about
that much.
Yeah, it's, like it, I find it fun, but
even driving through 80 in Pennsylvania, there's these elevations that are like remarkable.
Yeah.
No, it's actually the sort of lack of maintenance for the infrastructure that's frightening. That was the frightening part.
Well, that's what the situation is driving through Detroit. Like when you're getting off on an interchange and the chunks of the overpass are coming down off.
Flying off as you drive.
Yeah, it's awful.
Actually,
and they've got like nets put up to catch concrete.
That's where we are with maintenance.
Yeah.
So yes, this sort of thin ribbon of concrete along the mountainside as the Ohio River Valley opens up.
Mm.
Exquisite to view, but it really felt like
a little terrifying to drive on.
And at one point,
it was made for lower speed limits too.
Yes. Well, and the speed limit is actually 55.
Oh, really? Okay. It's maybe even
in 2025. The speed limit is 55 miles an hour on these roads. And unlike other places that I've been, when I obey the speed limit, people like zip around me. No, the other cars just slowed right down.
They know that.
They're like, yeah, they're it's not worth it.
They're not that dumb.
It's not worth it.
Yeah.
So
the riskiness of it is obvious.
It's obvious. But it's surreal. And to give you what I think is a really small but potent insight into the steel industry's influence, at one point the highway drove through a steel mill.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a tunnel through this mill, which part of it is literally falling apart,
mm-hmm.
and disuse.
Yeah.
Hanging in pieces over this highway. And part of it is actually functioning. You can see the lights on and stuff going on. And as I'm approaching it, I was convinced the road was going to curve around it in some way. I couldn't figure out.
Not straight through it.
I just passed straight through it. And yeah. I was like, am I on the exit? Is there an exit? Am I just going to... And
we were looking up pictures of this interchange on Google. And
absolutely,
like, wow,
it's a real experience.
It's both beautiful and
beautiful
weird.
And terrifying and weird. And I'm not sure, like, who signed the permit for this? This is
well, it must have
unbelievable.
Been for reasons, you know, like
for reasons because there's also like a huge like the so this mill goes over the highway through the town, this little teeny tiny town.
Right.
And out into the river, where you actually dock at the mill in the river.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming at some point that tunnel, like they load steel into the tunnel. I don't know.
We don't know.
I don't know. It was terrifying. because I'm like, is this... I was really wondering, is this just a mistake? Is this something...
Are you on the wrong road?
Am I on the wrong road? Was I supposed to take an exit?
Right.
I don't know what's going to happen.
Car's about to be melted down.
My car about to be melted down for spare steel? I don't know. But the highway just is a tunnel through the mill.
Yeah.
And then you're out the other side. And the whole thing happens really fast because you're moving 55 miles an hour and it's over. And then there's like exits for this little, when I say a small town, I mean it's the size of, like it's half the size of this neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
the entire town. And just like that, you're through the tunnel and you're out.
Mm-hmm.
But the lead up is kind of just
mind
boggling. And then there's all kinds of little inroads once you turn away from the river to go to Steubenville and other towns that are slightly more inland. Except slightly more. It's like highways run between the towns are on the river. The highway runs behind them,
mm-hmm.
and takes you into the towns. And what else can I say about it? It's a great small town, much like Saginaw, an amazing small town. And it seems to have survived better than Saginaw has.
There aren't whole burnt out neighborhoods that have been abandoned.
Neighborhoods, but the downtown core is still standing. For the most part.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Lots of chunks of
Saginaw's
downtown
are just missing.
Are missing. Just missing teeth.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I hate to make the comparison, but I think it's apt. When I drove through Saginaw when we first moved there, it looked like Dresden after the bombing.
A war zone.
They
call it a bombed out city.
Right.
And it's just the bombs were economic and not explosive.
Not explosive, but economic. And yeah, it just like huge swaths of the city. There's some buildings standing, but huge swaths of the city just
flattened. Yeah, there's some standing in isolation where all their neighboring buildings have been demolished because they were collapsing.
Yeah, yeah. So in that way, Steubenville has fared better. But lots of neighborhoods look like Saginaw's downtown. Mm-hmm. People are moving back, though. Young families are moving back in conjunction with the university. And trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
Doing a lot of great strong town stuff, bottom-up organizing to build and foster community, and to really draw businesses from the local community that serve the local community. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that work is happening on the ground. It's really, really inspiring to see. Lots of arts groups, because, you know, that's the vanguard of community building, right. is sort of arts and local business and entertainment.
It should be, but like the amount of contempt in our political like landscape now for anyone those who's an artist or a community organizer or
those freaks,
anything other than, you know, a CEO really is it's appalling.
Which is weird because, I don't know, what do CEOs even do? I'm not trying to be an ass. I'm just asking. So that was.
They serve Kier.
They serve Kier. that was the town and the visit, and it was good. Revolution of Tenderness is a great organization. It's a 501c organization, 501c3 organization, and their annual festival was lovely, really a marvelous event. Glad that I could participate. It was a privilege to be there.
Sounds great. And do you want to talk at all about the process of prepping to try to write
Oh, yeah, this is actually really fun. So their theme was In the Vacant Places We Will Build with New Bricks, which is a T.S. Eliot, part of a T.S. Eliot poem or play. And in the organizing, when I was chatting and doing all this...
It's a strange... play. It's not a complete play. It's like the choruses from a play.
Yeah.
I don't have the book with me, but
yeah. It's quite something.
Yeah.
Something unusual.
But there was some confusion over exactly what your reading assignment was.
Which poem this was lifted from.
Right.
That they were taking. So they took this inspiration as the theme for their annual festival. And so I was going to go read those, and I was told in the organizing, this was from the four quartets. Mm-hmm. So I went to read the four quartets and kind of prep my speech around their theme.
We read them together, and I wanted to read them with you because I had studied PSLA years ago. But I never studied the quartets.
And so this was an adventure. Yeah. And I have to say,
it took days. They're quite dense. They're stylistic, huge stylistic shifts over the course of the poems, huge tonal shifts.
Yep.
From like very elevated to very discursive.
Very abstract.
Yeah, abstract to concrete. Great. It's very interesting to study and talk about, but they don't give up their meaning all that easily.
No, you got to dig for it.
So we're like, oh, I hope we can understand this well.
All to discover.
Right.
After
days.
Days. That is not, those are not the poems the quote is from.
Right.
The quote is actually from Choruses from the Rock, mm-hmm. which was a charity play that T.S. Eliot did to raise money for rebuilding a church. And so...
which is also very strange, by the way. It's very strange.
It's also a very strange play and pieces of poetry.
Right, but...
But a little more concrete, which is actually my style. And so we read that one, too. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I'm less than a week out, and I'm still trying to finish writing this thing and kind of get my head around what motivated them, or what motivated them in their theme for this year. Mm-hmm. So I eventually read that, and it's a little easier to get into.
It's easier to read.
Easier to read, and easier to understand. Lots of little snippets to engage with, and it inspired me when I finally did get to the right piece of poetry. It did inspire me and help me to write, I think, something worthwhile. I hope people enjoyed it. And, you know, I think they did. I got lots of requests for transcripts and for copies of what I'd written. And, yeah, I think it came out well afterwards, after all was said and done. And no regrets having read some T.S. Eliot.
Oh, no, absolutely not. The only regret I had is you didn't get enough time to really prepare based on the text you were supposed to be
reading.
Like looking at.
Ultimately, I did include some clips from the others.
From the quartets.
The quartets. Yeah. Actually, T.S. Eliot's most famous quote
is from the quartets.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
all right.
There was that.
Well, without further ado, and I'm sorry that I dragged this out, but this is just how I talk and think. It's slowly. It takes a long time, but let's hear it.
Let's hear it. All right. So I'm going to read verbatim, because this was a first for me. I typically write at the last minute, and sometimes we'll speak extemporaneously.
Yeah, I just use cards or notes and then mark everything up as I go.
Right. You know? I actually wrote the entire thing before I got there, so I could offer people copies for anyone hard of hearing in the audience,
mm-hmm.
so that they could just read along with me speaking. So I more or less said exactly what my pre-written speech said.
Okay.
So, here we go. I'm going to start with a few lines by T.S. Eliot, lifted from Choruses from the Rock. Let me show you the work of the humble. Listen. In the vacant places, we will build with new bricks. Where the bricks are fallen, we will build with new stone. Where the beams are rotten, we will build with new timbers. Where the word is unspoken, we will build with new speech. There is work together. Those words were published in 1934, and they are absolutely prescient for the moment we find ourselves in, more than 90 years later. And how inspiring is it to have this insight time travel to us? It's remarkable, really. Yet sadly, how should I say this? Well, I have good news and I have bad news. Let's just get the bad news out of the way. All of our work is destined for failure and brokenness. All of it. Please don't kid yourself. But the good news is that failure happens every winter and is followed by the opportunity of spring. The good news is that failure is necessary. It is the path to springtime, to summer, and the harvest. Right? There's no way out but through. The good news is all that is broken can be redeemed. Never ever the same, but redeemed. And it is our privilege to participate in that redemption. But what exactly does that participation look like? I think that can be a bit nuanced and maybe hard to describe plainly. So, I have a story. I don't tell short stories, so stay with me. I am the 7th of 9 children, 5 older brothers in stair steps, a sibling that died in infancy, me, and then a younger brother and sister. When my older brothers were in elementary, middle schoolish, they had a game they absolutely loved after school. We lived in one of those Center Hall colonials, right? I don't know if that's an East Coast thing or if you have those out here, but it had the center entrance hall, rooms to either side, and the kitchen in back. But if you opened all the doors between the rooms, there was this loop, like this racetrack on the wood floors with socks. And they would run hard until they were exhausted and then collapse on the couch until dinner. It was grand. Until one day, brother number 4 thought that he might beat brother number 3 this time. And in his haste, he slipped and went flying, leaving a hole the size of a 9-year-old's bottom in the wall. My mother came in horrified and said, "Oh my God!" She didn't say that. I'm not going to repeat what she said here. "You rascals, just wait until your father comes home." And so my dad comes home, he looks at the hole, and then he just walks outside. He stands out there for like 10 full minutes. When he comes back
in... I'm familiar with that feeling. Sorry.
He just picks up the phone and he calls a guy. Then we have dinner. No one discusses it. The next day, the guy comes over, he fixes the hole. My brothers are angels. They clean up. They're setting the table. They help without being asked. The whole bit. You know? So dad comes home. He sees the fix. He admires it. He asks how much. The guy is sending a bill. The boys promise to be less rowdy. All is well. So the very next day, brother number two thinks that maybe he's faster than brother number one. And if just the two of them race, it'll be less rowdy than all five of them. So they can settle this once and for all and maintain their sincere commitment to reduced rowdiness. So brother number two trips on number three. He goes flying into the same wall, leaving a hole the size of a 13-year-old's bottom. And friends, let me tell you, that was the day we became a play outside until dinner family. Rain or shine, hot or cold. Did you know it was my mom that coined the phrase, there's no bad weather, only bad gear, put your snow pants on? I think people only use the first part now, but that was her. While it's funny, no brothers were injured in this story, just to be clear. That event changed a lot about our family. We didn't live in a Center Hall colonial again until my youngest sibling was 9. And personally, I practically lived in the woods as a child. But the fact is, every community has events that change their trajectory. My husband and I started a Catholic worker house in Saginaw, Michigan in 2010. While you may not know Saginaw's particular story, everyone in the manufacturing belt knows this story. General Motors once employed 50,000 people, half the population, at a foundry on the river in Saginaw. By 2010, GM employed 5,000 people at that foundry, leaving a hole the size of 45,000 people in the city. And I'm sure you understand a hole that size is not just those individuals, but the pharmacies, grocery stores, diners, and schools that they used. All of those local businesses and resources just gone. A hole that size is so many vacant lots. When we entered the conversation, the city was trying to call a guy to patch the hole, and they really didn't want to discuss it. Community members had a nickname for the guy they were trying to call, GM Jesus. The idea was some manufacturing business somewhere, in response to enough compensation and tax breaks, was going to come out of the clear blue sky, like Jesus himself, and patch the hole in the city with 45,000 new jobs. The city just needed to get the compensation right. Now, the concept was ridiculous on its face, even if it framed in more flattering terms. But like my father, all the city could envision was restoration of what was in the hole. It literally did not occur to them to change the fundamental dynamics that caused the hole in the first place. A few years into our time there, I made acquaintance with Chuck Marone of Strong Towns. And in 2013, he was passing through for a different talk and stopped to talk to us. Myself and several other community members attended a hastily organized event and learned a new perspective on how we might participate in redeeming Saginaw. Possibly the greatest insight for us was realizing that what had become of our place happened in a specific context with specific incentives that led us to where we were in that moment. And because of those factors, there really was no going back to what was. The context was the offshoring of U.S. manufacturing. The incentive was to enrich the haves that were in privileged positions to benefit from extending public money to their own connections. They'd already had a false start on the enterprise in the 90s and early 2000s by luring a second-tier auto supplier into town. And while the haves came out of that deal okay, the city, after 10 years, had lost more jobs than the supplier had brought. Which reminds me of the second incentive fueling the city's drive to find GM Jesus. They were desperate not to have the population fall below 50,000. Falling below that threshold would make the city ineligible for a tier of federal funding reserved for large cities. But now if we fast forward in time and look at the seeds scattered in that talk in 2013, and I say scattered intentionally, nothing was planted or cultivated. The ideas were truly just scattered through the community. If we look now, we can see how those seeds found fertile ground and took root. The focus has shifted from growing the city to reclaim its former glory to creating a wonderful place for the 47,000 people that still live there and keep the streetlights on, the water treatment plant running. Ultimately, what Saginaw and my parents came to understand was that repairing what was broken is less about restoration in itself, Fully participating in repair is about seeing how things have to be different now, in light of what's happened. And Mr. Elliot says it so plainly that it's easy to miss. In the vacant places we will build, not restore. With new, not old, not replacement bricks. Reading further in that same passage, it might be stones or something else altogether, and not bricks at all. And after all these abstractions and metaphors, you may ask yourself, but what does creating a wonderful place for 47,000 people actually look like in material reality? Let me tell you. The Saginaw community had a wonderful farmer's market, open 6 hours a day, 4 days a week. But they decided to take that a step further. They negotiated a deal for a vacant industrial office building downtown, then fully renovated the parking lot into a permanently covered outdoor seasonal farmer's market. Inside became a year-round farm market, food court, and small business incubator. There's even a ballroom community space. My children have been to cons there, you know, like a Comic-Con? They're literally hosting regional Comic-Cons now. Still open 4 days a week, but year-round, and people work 8-hour days there now, alongside and in service to their neighbors. And right now the community is working on renovating their train station, literally with volunteers. Volunteers that aren't reclaiming bricks are petitioning the DOT to reestablish passenger rail to the city for tourism. They recently completed work on what is the second largest mural in the United States. They've salvaged neon signs from the city's demolished buildings and created a public outdoor sign park in collaboration with the county museum. And now, as wonderful as these initiatives are, we need to keep in mind the acceptance of failure from the start. Embrace it, even. What is that clip from the internet? I am shocked to discover that the process of trial and error involves error. When the folks that created the Saginaw with a population of 100,000 made that place, there was no consideration of a day when there was no GM. Because before GM, there were beans. At one point, Saginaw, Michigan was the bean capital of the world. I'm not even kidding. And before that, lumber. They worked with what they had, where they were, with the people and the place around them. Part of the stalling out after the reality of GM leaving and leaving nothing in its place was the expectation that the project that had worked for so long would somehow just keep working. But in fact, it was time to learn the lessons from that season and start anew. There will come a day when that beautiful farmer's market fails. It will somehow no longer be able to meet the community's needs in the time and the context that it finds itself. Maybe the train station project will never work, and they'll just need to cut their losses and move on. The day of failure might come sooner, and it might come later, but it will come. And that doesn't mean anyone did anything, quote-unquote, wrong in the time and context where it flourished. Even if that time and context was brief, the effort wasn't wasted. The community that coalesced in the effort is what nourished the people in it. The thing is, in a kind of secret way, the failures themselves are the good news. But full disclosure, and I want to be completely clear about this part, those failures are going to feel like failures, and it won't feel like a good day. For those here that profess the Christian faith, we know that there is no Easter without Good Friday. And that reality applies to every part of our lives and everything that we do. In what might be his most famous quote, T.S. Eliot cautions, "Humankind can't bear very much reality, but we can bear some. And the reality we must bear is that we can't even make failed attempts without each other." Later on in chorus, as Mr. Eliot asks, "What life have you? If you have not life together, there is not life that is not in community." So we have to, all of us, learn how to eat a slice of humble pie and be grateful for it if we want to live in community. We also have to learn either upfront or the hard way that inclusion means everyone. So I've talked a bit about not dwelling on the restoration of the past, instead accepting, even embracing failure, and grounding your actions in the realities of the present. But that is not in any way to say that we should disregard the past and pretend that we are working on a tabula rasa. Many years ago, I taught a class on collaborative strategic planning using a tool called Future Search. It's an incredibly effective method. It was a good hour into a 90-minute class, and a woman shot her hand up and said, "Wait a minute. So if I want to shut down the pipeline in my community, I need to include Shell in the planning." I said, "You want to get rid of it, right?" She said, "Yes." Shut it off, and it never comes back on, obviously. That is never going to happen if Shell is not a part of the conversation in some way. Now, what does happen when clear stakeholders are excluded is that everyone gets on a treadmill, has a great workout, and goes nowhere. And certainly Shell is an unimaginably powerful stakeholder. But this isn't just true of powerful stakeholders. You can't meet just ends without the most vulnerable stakeholders either. One of the founders of the DC Catholic Worker House more than 40 years ago told the story of making pots of soup for homeless men sleeping over the heating grates near the entrance to his apartment. After doing this several times, the largest of the men confronted him and poured the soup over his head. The large man said, "We are not your pets. You set food bowls out here on the sidewalk like we're stray dogs. Do you know if we can even eat this food?" He was referring to allergies. Some of them had. It wasn't that moment that our nascent Catholic worker discovered he was not getting anywhere on his treadmill. In essence, going anywhere and accomplishing anything as a community means taking the journey there as a community. And every community has a past, past successes and disappointments, past grievances and friendships, past investments waiting to be realized, and past debts waiting to be paid. We can only ignore the past at our own peril. Recognizing the past reveals the clearest path forward and the roadblocks that have to be removed to get anywhere at all. In a genuine community, even the individuals you don't like belong there. Please don't mistake that for letting the powerful and the bullies have their way. It is not. It means discerning just ends or reasons for having a community, and then meeting those ends for everyone in the community. If one of your ends, for example, is that everyone governed by the town has safe access to town hall, maybe you build a protected walkway to town hall and make certain it is accessible to everyone, even the powerful and the bullies, but especially to vulnerable people. In community, everyone is a stakeholder. And wherever you're going, the only way there is together. In closing, we'll talk again to Mr. Elliott's wisdom, this time from Little Gidding. What we call the beginning is often the end. And to make an end is to make a beginning. The end is where we start from. Thank you.
All right. Very nice.
Thank you.
Thought it was good. Not that you need my approval, but you got a lot of positive feedback on your talk.
I did get a lot of positive feedback. It was a really lively discussion afterwards, and people asking about how they might handle various things.
See, I was panicking on your behalf because I felt like we hadn't fully understood, you know, the four quartets and sufficiently analyzed the underlying metaphors.
Whereas the metaphor and meaning in
the play, the rock,
yeah, is actually much more salient and was much easier to.
Right, and it was not about, the assignment was not really about literary criticism.
No, it was not. I was not speaking to a literary organization.
Yes.
And I can't imagine any literary organization inviting me to speak about anything, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure about that. But it was great. I'm thank you for reading it.
And sure.
I think we're gonna wind up. Tonight is movie night. We've got some cooking to get on with and stuff like that and clean up, and then I don't know exactly what we're watching tonight. We've got a lot of films.
We'll see.
Yeah. What is that? I wish I could remember the names of the ones that I just got recently. There's an Iranian animated film called Persepolis that we still want to watch. There's something about the woods. I just got this from Vinegar Syndrome. Mm-hmm. Let me see if it'll show me. I'm searching on the word woods. Keep talking. While I'm looking this up, tell us a little for a moment longer about the, like, the poetry reading and stuff that you went to.
You're not going to let me sing my song. Fine. No, they had... actually, I haven't been to a poetry reading in 30 years. Maybe longer.
Mm-hmm. I used to do poetry slams, but yeah.
But one of the events at the festival was a poetry reading, and they had two poets reading from their current publications. So these are, you know, they're working poets. They have academic careers as well.
I brought one back.
I brought one back. This was really good. Yours, Purple Gallinule, by Ewa Krusiel, a poet, Polish poet. And this is her first book written in English. She usually writes in Polish and then translates, but this is her first book written in English. And it's just all these wonderful poems about motherhood, about grief.
I read through some of them, and I, as fully qualified literary critic, I was quite impressed.
Quite impressed.
The way she smashes together high and low wording and, like, you know, that very earthy language and very elevated language all together
all
with, like, natural metaphors and, like, real life situations. And it's beautifully done. You know, it's like, it's like a poetry put through a super collider.
I was impressed.
To uncover the underlying particles that you haven't discovered
and,
yet.
And gave money I didn't have to have a copy of the book because it was very good.
Yeah, so that's going in our library.
Yes. Yes,
I got to rearrange some books.
Did you find your thing, or
I have to rearrange downstairs to make room for it?
Oh yeah, did you find the thing?
Oh yeah, yeah. So okay. The one of the films we might watch tonight is called When You Get to the Forest. So it is a animated film made out of paper cuttings.
Yeah,
and it looks really cool.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it, so we haven't previewed it.
We'll see what happens.
If it has anything in it that will traumatize the kids, it's like, oops,
oh well.
So.
You know, I don't think they can do any worse than the 80s movies we enjoyed and tried to show them.
Oh, right.
Yes.
No, we showed them Terminator. You know.
Like, oh, wait, no. Sorry, kids.
Yeah.
I thought this was a fun kids movie. My mistake.
I remember it as a
fun kids movie.
Turns out it's a horror flick.
It's actually a horror flick.
Yeah.
Nothing that a child should see. Oh, wow, that was a rape scene. Sorry, guys.
Oh, no, that was Back to the Future.
Right. And 16 candles, right?
16 candles.
Oh, shit. No, actually turn that off. Just don't stop.
No, but we talk about anything
anything that comes up.
We have a lot of conversations about what we watch. So, anyway, I think we're going to wind it up and move on with our evening. But thank you all for listening.
Indeed.
Take care.
Take care.